Random House Audio presents Shift by Tim Kring and Dale Peck. Read for you by Robert Forster. Yet the gods sent Orpheus away from Hades empty-handed. Plato, Symposium. Dallas, Texas, December 30th, 2012. The apparition appeared at 11:22 a.m. over I-35 in the 200-foot gap between the north and southbound lanes where the interstate passed over Commerce Street. Traffic was heavy at that hour, but moving well. 12 lanes on 35, average speed 66 miles per hour, another 6 on Commerce, traveling only slightly less fast. When the flaming figure appeared in the sky, the results were predictably disastrous. According to the Texas State Highway Patrol, 35 vehicles collided with one another, resulting in 77 injuries, cuts and bruises, whiplash, broken bones, concussions, at least 3 seizures. A pregnant woman went into labor, but both she and the baby, and remarkably, everyone else involved in the pileup, survived the trauma. In addition to the injured, another 1,886 people claimed to have seen the apparition, making a grand total of 1,963, a figure later confirmed by both the Dallas Police Department and the Dallas Morning News. It was this last number that sent the story, already ricocheting around the airwaves and the Internet, into the stratosphere. 12:30, 11:22, 1963. The time, date, and year that the 35th President of the United States had been assassinated, less than a quarter mile due east of the sighting. It was possible, though infinitesimally improbable, that this sequence was just a coincidence. Why hadn't the figure appeared at 12:30 p.m. on November 22nd? Skeptics were soon enough arguing on chat shows and blogs the actual date and time of the assassination. What was harder for them to dismiss was the fact that every single witness, all 1,963 of them, reported seeing exactly the same thing. This wasn't a fuzzy image of a crucified Jesus on a piece of toast or the shadowy outline of the Virgin Mary in an MRI. In fact, none of the 26 traffic and surveillance cameras with a view of the area recorded anything besides the accident itself. Nevertheless, each and every witness reported seeing a boy, Michael Campbell, 29, told one reporter. A flaming boy, Antonio Gonzalez, 56, told the paramedic bandaging the gouge over his left eye. A boy made of fire, Lisa Wallace, 34, told the person who answered the 800 number of her insurance carrier. He looked right at me. It was like he was looking for someone. But it wasn't me. There was a palpable sense of disappointment as witness after witness made this last admission, as if they'd somehow failed a test. But then their spirits perked up when they reported that they'd felt the boy coming, as if the privilege of witnessing his appearance was a blessing on the order of those bestowed on the sainted receivers of visions at Guadalupe, Lourdes, Fatima. One after another, witnesses reported the sensation of a tremor in the roadway that came up through their cars and was absorbed by fingers and toes and bottoms, the kind of vibration Mindy Pizansky, a California native, described as like the start of an earthquake. Hands tightened their grips on steering wheels or door handles. Eyes scanned mirrors and windshields for the cause of the disturbance, which appeared, no matter where people were, whether they approached the area from north or south or east or west, directly in their line of vision, facing them, looking them straight in the eye, and then looking away. I saw him as clearly as I see your face, said Yu Wen, 14. His eyes were wide open, said Jenny McDonald, 28. His mouth was open, too, said Billy Ray Baxter, 79. A perfect O, said Charlotte Wolfe, 36, adding, It was the saddest face I ever saw in my life. Not just sad, Haley Wolfe, Charlotte's daughter, 11, clarified. Lonely. The boy blazed in the air for 3 or 4 seconds, a figure that caused almost as much furor as the previous numbers, as lone gunman supporters lined up against conspiracy theorists over whether the apparition was some kind of otherworldly endorsement of the Warren Commission's findings or those of the House Select Committee on Assassinations. No matter which side you were on, however, it was hard to say what the flaming boy could have had to do with a crime whose 49th anniversary had gone largely unremarked upon a month earlier. Not one of the witnesses said he reminded them of the dead president or his presumed assassin. In fact, almost everyone expressed disinterest in the unnerving string of numbers when it was relayed to them, let alone the proximity of the sighting to Dealey Plaza, the Texas School Book Depository, the grassy knoll. 1,963 witnesses, all of them seeing the same thing. A seraphic figure, 10 feet tall, arms and legs trailing off in ropes of fire, a corona of flame rising from his head. The empty shadows of his eyes scanned the crowd while a silent cry leaked with smoke from his open mouth. 62% of witnesses used the word angel to describe the appearance. 27% used the word demon. The remaining 11% used both. But only one man said that he looked like Orpheus. From the myth, Lemuel Haynes, a businessman from the East Coast, told Shana Wright, on-air correspondent for the Dallas-Fort Worth NBC affiliate. You know, turning around, looking for Eurydice, only to see her drag back down to hell. Wright, who later described Haynes as elderly but still fit, with a large build, dark hair, and mixed complexion, said that the witness told her he'd just landed at Love Field and was on his way to a meeting. What a lucky coincidence, Wright recalled telling him, that it should show up at the same time you did, to which Haynes replied, Luck had nothing to do with it. According to Wright, she then asked Haynes if he thought the apparition had anything to do with the Kennedy assassination. Haynes looked over Wright's shoulder for a long time, at the Texas School Book Depository, she later realized, which was just visible through the famous triple underpass, before turning back to her. It has everything to do with it, he said. And nothing at all. And then his driver, a middle-aged Asian man with a wiry build, knocked her cameraman unconscious and took the memory chip from his camera. By the time Homeland Security arrived at the scene, they were gone. Part 1. The Monroe Doctrine. We owe it, therefore, to candor and to the amicable relations existing between the United States and those powers to declare that we should consider any attempt on their part to extend their system to any portion of this hemisphere as dangerous to our peace and safety, with the existing colonies or dependencies of any European power we have not interfered and shall not interfere. But with the governments who have declared their independence and maintained it, and whose independence we have on great consideration and on just principles acknowledged, we could not view any interposition for the purpose of oppressing them or controlling in any other manner their destiny by any European power in any other light than as the manifestation of an unfriendly disposition toward the United States. It is impossible that the Allied powers should extend their political system to any portion of either continent without endangering our peace and happiness, nor can anyone believe that our southern brethren, if left to themselves, would adopt it of their own accord. It is equally impossible, therefore, that we should behold such interposition in any form with indifference. If we look to the comparative strength and resources of Spain and those new governments and their distance from each other, it must be obvious that she can never subdue them. It is still the true policy of the United States to leave the parties to themselves in the hope that other powers will pursue the same course. James Monroe, 1823. Camagüey prop.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?